Thank you. Morning, everybody. Great. So thank you for having me here. So I'm Lily Farhang. I work with Human Impact Partners. We're based in Oakland, California. No relationships to disclose, financial at least. So HIP is a national nonprofit. We're based in Oakland. And what we do is really support community organizing groups, public health agencies, academic institutions, sort of other institutions that are interested in reforming and kind of activating public health to try and improve the places and policies that we all are exposed to on a daily basis. And we try to do that by getting decision makers, policy makers, administrative leaders to sort of think about health and health equity as they make their decisions. And the way that we do our work is through research, so conducting our own public health research projects such as health impact assessments, providing training and technical assistance to government agencies and others that want to build their own internal capacity for change, and then doing direct advocacy of decision makers, and so that can include communications or lobbying or whatever you want to sort of put in the being agitational bucket. And ultimately, what we're really trying to do is activate public health and public health science to participate in campaigns for a more just society. So what I'm going to talk about today is one of our capacity building efforts around health equity, which is our public health and equity cohort, which is an intervention to develop the leadership of emerging leaders at local public health departments around the country. I'll describe the structure of the cohort, the curricula, and the learning and teaching approaches we use. And then, since we're not quite done with the cohort yet, I will just highlight a few of the outcomes and kind of strengths and challenges of the teaching and learning approach. And so I think this, just the context really for why we established the cohort in the first place is that through our training and technical assistance work, we work with public health departments around the country, and there's a lot of really sort of inspiring and exciting and sort of activist-y type people that work in public health departments that believe in the social determinants and believe in doing as much as they possibly can to advance health equity, but they really confront structural and institutional barriers to being able to advance change within their local public health departments. And, you know, through our 10 years of providing this kind of training and technical assistance, I think we have come away with an understanding of what some of the barriers or the reasons are for that, I think, for that resistance to change within local public health departments. And I think to some extent, public health has become more recently disconnected from social justice movements, and so it translates into a lack of outside allies that can basically push from the outside for change on the inside. Even though we think that there's a significant appreciation of social determinants of health, there's sort of less of like a content-based understanding of what actually you can push on in criminal justice or in employment and economic policy to actually advance health. And then we think that there's basically risk aversion, that I think public health departments are ultimately led by often appointed leaders and elected officials that those appointed leaders are accountable to, and so there's often conflicts around the sort of political will that you need to push for health equity and social determinants of health. And then finally, there's sort of just a lack of capacity and resources, including funding and tools and data. And so, you know, sort of based on that, we thought, okay, there's all these awesome people that work in local public health departments, and they really want to make change. And so how can we really help develop their leadership to increase their capacity to advance health equity and the social determinants of health? And so we felt like practitioners needed support, like really one-on-one and peer support to develop that capacity to overcome the aforementioned challenges that I mentioned. We also realized there's just limited space for emerging leaders. So there's, I think there can be a lot of excitement as people sort of move into the public health workforce. And as they're growing their skills and taking on more responsibility, it's sort of not as clear where some of those developing leaders within public health departments can come together. Like, you know, some of these sessions, it's like the established leaders within public health are kind of talking about their experiences, which is amazing from a mentorship perspective. But from a troubleshooting perspective for emerging leaders, I think that that can be helpful. And so we got funding from the Kresge Foundation and the Kellogg Foundation, excuse me, just the Kresge Foundation, to launch the Public Health and Equity Cohort as a space to really build these capacities. And so our theory of change is that through dialogue, targeted training, and mentorship, and relationship building, convening the cohort would increase the capacity and success of the participants, so the emerging leaders in the cohort, to advance health equity, and if those successes are publicized, could catalyze more innovation and risk-taking by others in the field, and then it would actually help increase participants' ability to cultivate, mentor, and serve as models for other practitioners. So it's just a map of where our dozen cohort members are from. Some of the places that they represent include the city of Boston, Tacoma County, San Mateo County, the city of Bloomington, Minnesota, LA County, Jefferson County in Alabama, the city of Independence in Missouri, Douglas County in Nebraska. So we really went for kind of a mix of geographies, so that the sort of cohort experience would not be defined by kind of the East Coast, West Coast, I think, model of doing public health, which can look kind of a little bit different than what goes on in the Midwest. This is our cohort, including, I should say, a few of the mentors, and I'll talk about that in a quick second. And so, you know, why did we take this sort of, when we were designing the cohort, we thought taking a peer teaching approach, like if I'm going to actually talk about pedagogy, when we were actually trying to figure out, like, what are the actual educational teaching and learning models that you could implement in this kind of setting, what might be the most effective? And so after kind of doing a little bit of a scan on what are kind of the common teaching learning approaches, and I often just say teaching learning instead of pedagogy because I feel like it's a little bit easier. We settled on a peer teaching model and sort of a case study model. And so what that actually means is that peers in similar institutions provide insights on how institutions operate. So cohort members are sort of serving as peers for each other, and mentors, which again I'll talk about in a second, are serving as peers for folks in the cohort to really try and kind of apply their own experiences and knowledges of how parallel institutions work to provide insights. And so we also thought that using a peer teaching model could help would sort of allow, I think folks can speak the same language around opportunities and barriers, and so it makes it a little bit easier to draw on the experiences of others. It also allows everyone to play a teaching and learning role, so I think just politically, our Human Impact Partners perspective is like we're not the experts in this. I think we view ourselves as convening and coordinating, but we don't feel like we own all the knowledge. And so taking a peer teaching approach actually honors the fact that people are coming with knowledge of their own that's incredibly valuable to include. And it allows for a greater equalizing and kind of validation of participants' experiences and ideas. And so a couple of the other reasons, we feel like the model lends itself to collective sharing of examples, receiving feedback and guidance, and then debating, which we thought was a pretty important part of kind of the co-learning that was going on. And then what we've learned just through the years is that relationship building and sort of having a kind of cadre of folks that you can always draw on is sort of core to ever coming out of tense situations. And I feel like developing a set of relationships with people that can support you as you're doing whatever change work you want to do within your public health department over the long term is probably as important as any of the content that people were actually learning in the cohort. And so the peer teaching and case study methods we used, we did a lot of small group breakouts. We would do workshopping where people would kind of bring a problem that they were experiencing at their local public health department, and other members of the cohort would basically workshop that with them. We would do fishbowls where folks would work through challenges or opportunities, and others would kind of observe and then give feedback on how they might do things, have conversations differently. We did a lot of one-to-ones, which we sort of drew from the community organizing world. To sort of really, I think, give a space for people to share like their fears and challenges and kind of go deep into what the roots of some of that are. We did a lot of highlighting of wins to try and get people to feel inspired by other folks' actions. And then we would do expert quote-unquote presentations in content areas. So just a little bit about the cohort structure. So this is the first time we've ever done this. It's a 15-month program. We had an in-person meeting at month one, and then at month seven, and then our last meeting will be in January 2016. And then in between, we had monthly video conferences. That's a screenshot of basically like what it would look like when everybody would be on the computer together. And if anybody ever wants an alternative to the ridiculously high rates of some of the common webinar softwares, I'm proud. Zoom US, if anybody ever wants an alternative, it's only $10 a month. We had a list. I'm not being paid by Zoom. I just really feel like it's an underutilized resource. We had a listserv. And then I would say that something that we tried with this was kind of a project-based component to the work. And so each month, people were kind of troubleshooting issues that they were experiencing and learning about new content and building skills. But we also wanted to encourage folks in the cohort to actually be trying to advance kind of project-based work as part of the teaching-learning approach. And so what that means is that participants in the cohort should actually pick a policy topic that they want to see move within their local environment and figure out how to engage in that policy topic. And so half of the cohort members picked minimum wage campaigns and the other half picked early childhood campaigns. And so what that actually means is that they were trying to connect with community organizing groups and social justice folks that are doing work in those two areas and figure out how can the public health department lend its support. And I would say on the early childhood education side, I think public health sort of felt a lot more comfortable in that and in fact was already sort of doing things around those issues. And I would say on the minimum wage side, it just took more work and there was often more political pushback. So I'm not sort of ready to talk about the project-based component too much yet because we haven't judged whether or not it was super successful, but that was one element of the cohort as well. So we also had a how am I on time? 3 minutes. Okay. So we also had a mentorship component. I'll just highlight that there were basically 10 leaders from public health agencies and other places who kind of would weigh in with their expertise and come to the in-person meetings. They helped us co-develop the curricula, which was incredibly important, and then they provided peer support and strategizing to cohort members. And so just some of the topics. So we focused really in two domains across the in-person meetings and the monthly webinars. So there was a set of kind of theoretical content areas and then applied practice areas. And so on the content areas we thought were really important for people to get a sense of around health equity and social determinants or issues like narrative and worldview, power and ideology, structural racism, targeted universalism, community organizing. And then on the applied practice side, it was much more around how do you do a power analysis and organizational mapping? How do you have a one-to-one conversation? How do you use like a racial equity analysis tool? What are health and all policies models? And so the skills-based stuff is around like concrete ways to translate theory into action or practice. And I think our overarching message that really evolved over the entire experience, and I think like sort of our understanding of how health equity work can happen within local public health departments is that you really need an inside and an outside strategy. So folks within public health departments need to develop internal champions and build allies among their staff and develop their leadership and build capacities across their departments. But then equally as important is kind of an organizing strategy on the outside to build relationships with groups that can kind of demand accountability and responsiveness from that public health department in social determinants of health domains. And so I'll just highlight a couple of the initial outcomes. So for example, like folks in Jefferson County, actually in Alabama, played a role in sort of a policy win to increase the minimum wage there that we supported them in doing. The City of Bloomington Department of Public Health made a formal request to the Minnesota Department of Health, thanks Ed, to incorporate health equity more broadly into the programming and services work that they were doing. So that's an example of like a local public health department figuring out how to leverage their state health department to provide support when they were, I think, confronting some challenges. There were obviously new strategies and tools and resources that were disseminated and that people were using. And then I think what the cohort members found is that their experience sort of lent in the cohort lent them credibility within their departments to, like, I actually know what I'm talking about. And so their leadership of their agency leaned into them more as a resource to sort of extend some of the ideas that people picked up in the cohort more broadly. So it gave them credibility and then cover. And so this is personally my favorite slide because of the photo. So I'm going to just go 1 minute over and basically highlight some of the strengths of our learning approach. And so I would just say, because Human Impact Partners didn't come with predefined content, there was the space to develop a curricula and develop the trajectory to tailor it to the full spectrum of participants. So we didn't say, like, these are the 8 things you need to know, but we built it as we went based on what we heard the challenges were focusing, people were experiencing. And so that let us focus on real-time interests and struggles, and also to implement a sort of a more co-learning and collaborative experience, because we hadn't lined up all these speakers to come and speak. And, you know, I would say another strength is the peer-to-peer and mentor examples were easier to translate, and there was a sense of community that was built. On the challenge side, it's just really time and resource intensive to do this type of, it's much easier to have 12 months where you have 12 speakers lined up and talk to your cohort members. It's a lot harder to be adaptive and reactive to the challenges that you're hearing. We did rely on outside experts a lot, and so I think, you know, that's we can't do that over and over again. Video conferencing is not great, even if we did find what we think is better. And then I'll just say there's always a consistent tension between theory and balance. Some people could talk about narrative and ideology for months and months and months, and other people were like, okay, what do I do with that information? So thanks so much to the HIP folks who aren't here, and then all the cohort members. Thanks so much. Sorry, I went over.